All right. I got some fish to catch here. I got to get out of here. I hope you really do have a fantastic three-day weekend. We're going to have a best of on Monday, and I will see you back here next week. But also on Monday, please, please take a moment to remember those who have given the ultimate sacrifice for our nation and use part of that holiday for what it's intended for. All right. Hey, by the way, I got to get out of here. Coming up next, I heard Sherry defend me to John yesterday. So from now on, coming up next, it's the Sherry Alliker Show with John Carley. God bless you in these crazy times.
You all know her.
Sherry!
She's done about 100 more jobs than you and me.
Well, what do you know? Dory putting your name first, and then everything changes, and then the music, and it's very distracting to the listeners. They don't like change.
It's unsettling, isn't it? But so great. Thank you, Dory.
So fleeting. Diving into the news!
Mere prelude, right, John?
Yeah, it is mere prelude. We're the show of the day! Woo! All right. God bless Dory and safe travels, Dory. Hanging out with Tom Nelson, heading up there to go fishing. Every year I get invited. That's not true. They've never invited me. Okay. Even I saw Tom the other day at the airport. It's like, hey, going fishing again with Dory? Yeah, yeah. It's an annual thing. I was like, yeah. And then we're waiting for our bags to come through the TSA thing and just sort of, I go, Dory says it's great. Oh, it is great. We had fun up there. And Brock goes, Dory goes. I mean, it's a party. Huh. Is that your bag? Yeah, yeah. Hey, see you later. And off they go. So close.
But you know, if they invited you,
yes.
If they invited you, you'd be like, I don't want to go fishing. I really don't like fishing.
All you would just do is get invited. Want to get invited. Okay. All right, so here's the news. I guess it's one of these strange things, I guess. It must be a sort of a psychological thing. So there's all those kids are killed. Then every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So that's the news. And then we kind of back up. We take a big deep breath, and we take a huge step forward. And then we go, okay, well, who did it? And why did he do it? And what are those stories? But then there's still all these ants, all this energy around it, surrounding it. And then you go, well, then what else? Is there anything else that could have happened if we didn't know about this kid and his evil intent ahead of time? Now the story turns to, the police were there. There were lots of them there. And why didn't they go in? So now all of this energy directed towards, well, we want more information. And we're learning what'd they say, 19 officers altogether were just waiting there at and possibly were inside the building. So here's the Texas Department. This is a public safety director admitting that they made mistakes. Here we go.
The question simply is this. It was a 40-minute gap. And if the 911 operators were aware that children were alive in that classroom, why weren't officers notified of that? And if that's the case, why didn't they take action? That's the question. And again, I'll go back to the answer for right now, is that it was considered, okay? The decision was made on the scene. I wasn't there. But at the same point in time, you know, a decision was made that this was a barricaded subject situation. There was time to retrieve the keys and wait for a tactical team with the equipment to go ahead and breach the door and take on the subject at that point. That was the decision. That was the thought process at that particular point in time. Stand by. Right? I got it. Okay. Hey, from the benefit of hindsight, where I'm sitting now, of course it was not the right decision. It was the wrong decision. Period. There's no excuse for that. But again, I wasn't there, but I'm just telling you, from what we know, we believe there should have been an entry at that as soon as you can. Hey, when there's an active shooter, the rules change. It's no longer, okay, it's no longer a barricaded subject. You don't have time. You don't worry about outer perimeters. And someone said, hey, what do you tell the parents? I mean, you know, bottom line is that or someone talked about and said, if when there's kids in the room, why wasn't there an entry? Because it was believed, like I said at the time, that the subject was stationary, barricaded. There was no risk to other children. Again, on retrospect, from where I'm sitting right now, clearly there was kids in the room. Clearly, okay, they're at risk. And oh, by the way, even when you go back to shooting, there may be kids that are injured. Okay, they may have been shot but injured. And it's important for life-saving purposes to immediately get there and render aid.
Okay. He is right about the hindsight thing. This is a bunch of people that live in a small town. There's 16,000 people that live there, right? So the Border Patrol agents responded to this thing. There was a gentleman getting his hair cut. Do you see this story, Sherry?
I didn't see that, no.
So he gets a hair. He's getting a haircut. His wife texts, oh, my God, there's a shooter. Lockdown situation at the school. His daughter was at the school. He turns around and tells the barber. The barber hands him his shotgun. So he takes the barber's shotgun and goes to the school. So you had these parents, one particular one armed, others that were the Border Patrol agent that went in there. The bullet grazed just above his head. I saw the picture of his hat that had the tear in it. He'd been treated at the hospital. I think he was the guy that took down the shooter. It's a town of 16,000 people. I mean, I don't know how often these cops train for something like this, but I'm sure it's absolute pandemonium. The problem was that these kids were calling 911 from the room telling them, reporting. I'm sure, will we be a better society if all of us click on and listen to those desperate kids talking to 911 and hearing the shots, the 1-2-3 shot in the background, knowing those shots are most likely penetrating the bodies of little kids? Do we need that? Do you need that, Sherry?
No, I don't.
I don't need it. I don't want to hear it.
I don't either.
If it comes,
go ahead. I think I don't like 911 calls anyway. I find them to be unbelievably hard to listen to because it's people at their very worst moments, and to want to be a spectator to that, I don't understand why anybody would find that necessary. The guy that called the shots on this, pardon the expression, is a police chief named Pete Arrendo, and he was a former 911 dispatcher. He was just elected to the city council. He's what they call the school district chief. So there's four police officers, one police chief, and one detective. He was the one that told them to stand down, not to do anything, that they were waiting for tactical equipment and people to come in. They thought that the event was over, that there was already loss of life, and that they were just going in to get the gunman. And clearly, completely wrong on that assessment.
Here's McCraw talking and walking you through the timeline of the 911 call.
The caller identified, I'll not say her name, but she was in room 112, called 911 at 1203. The duration of the call was 1 minute and 23 seconds. She identified herself, whispered, she's in room 112. At 12:10, she called back in room 12, advised her multiple dead. 12:13, again she called on the phone. Again at 12:16, she called back and said there was 8 to 9 students alive. At 12:19, a 911 call was made, and another person in room 111 called. I will not say her name. She hung up when another student told her to hang up. 12:21, you could hear over the 911 call that three shots were fired. At 12:36, 911 call, it lasted for 21 seconds. The initial caller called back, student, child, called back, was told to stay on the line and be very quiet. She told 911 that he shot the door. At approximately 12:43, and 12:47, she asked 911 to please send the police now. At 12:46.
By the way, that young girl has spoken. She was interviewed. So she was in there when the shooting took place. He shot at her. I think it grazed her shoulder. She fell to the ground next to her now deceased classmate. She wiped the blood of that classmate on her to play dead in case he came back again, and she's the one that was making the calls.
She said she could not, that she could hear the police next door. At 12:50, shots are fired. They can be heard over the 911 call. And at 12:51, it's very loud and sounds like the officers are moving children out of the room. At that time, the first child that called was outside before the call cuts off.
So here's the final piece, a couple play for this. And again, for those people that find this to be disturbing, I'm right there with you. And I don't blame you if you turn away. Come back if this is too much. Come back. We have other news we'll get to. But for those people that want to hear this news, it's we have.
You say there were 19 officers gathered in the hallway or somewhere. What efforts were made to try and break through that door? You say it was locked. What efforts were the officers making to try and break through either that door or another door to get inside that classroom?
None at that time. The on-scene commander at the time believed that it had transitioned from an active shooter to a barricaded subject.
Sir, you have people who are alive, children who are calling 911 saying, please send the police. They are alive in that classroom. There are lives that are at risk.
Hey,
that's not
well aware of that.
Right, yeah. But why was this decision made not to go in and rescue these children?
Again, you know, the on-scene commander considered a barricaded subject and that there was time and there were no more children at risk. Obviously, you know, based upon the information we had.
That's odd, right? Because you have to assume that every shot was a kill shot. You have to assume that he killed them all, that there were no wounded and survivors, nobody that could have been saved, right? Aren't they assuming because for whatever reason, because of the amount of time has passed?
There were children in that classroom that were at risk, and it was, in fact, still an active shooter situation and not a barricaded subject.
A pen pal of mine named Daniel Flynn, who writes for American Spectator, writes this morning at 2:30. You want to hear this, Sherry?
Mm-hmm.
He says, one cannot rely on the police to protect you and your loved ones. When, as the great social philosopher Flava Flav once put it, 911 is a joke. This seems a fairly strong argument to buy a gun. Parents, understandably unarmed, hysterical, tried to succeed and failed to storm the building. People not paid by the state, nevertheless, possess greater incentive to confront criminals than state employees tasked to do that. When cops cannot control criminals, then the idea of allowing cops' employers to control your access to firearms strikes as insane. The same people urging everyone to lay down their weapons just 2 years ago urged everyone to defund the police. They want us to forget that and grant them a polite hearing now. No thanks. Daniel Flynn from American Spectator. And he says, what better argument could you have to be able to arm yourself if the people that are paid to protect us don't protect us?
So many things went wrong that day. For instance, how did he get into the school? The school, that side door had been propped open by a teacher. And the doors were unlocked because they had had a ceremony that day because they were ending school and kids were getting honor roll certificates and things like that. The gunman was also outside for about 12 minutes, I believe, it was a case of mistaken identity. A police officer was called because there was a gunman outside of the school near a funeral home, I guess. He started shooting. And when the police officer got there, he didn't think it was him. He thought it was somebody else. So he was able then to go to the school, get in that side door that had been propped open and into the classroom because I guess the doors were unlocked because there were so many parents and teachers and families running through the school that day.
Right.
It's just unthinkable. You know, if one of these things hadn't happened, if the door had not been propped open, if the door was closed or locked in the classroom, if they had gone in, I mean, they had to have heard those shots from outside. That's not a quiet gun. They had to be standing out there hearing those shots.
Somebody has to make the call. These guys, it's a command, chain of command.
Right.
So somebody has to say to them, go in, go in, go in, right? They're waiting. Let's assume that each one of those individuals that's tasked with protecting us were waiting and willing, right? Scott Peterson is the guy that was considered to be the coward and was actually put on trial for being a coward for not going in to the Parkland shooting, right? And now he has a kind of a strange life that he lives in some cabin some way, way far away from everybody. And, you know, he has to basically hide himself because people still recognize him. But, I mean, you can, as you pick through these things, I remember always reading about this guy named John Frederick Parker, who was supposed to be protecting Abraham Lincoln and all the stuff. He went down to the bar to had a drink. He was drunk when he came there. They knew that he was drunk. He should have been there. There was a lock on the door of Abraham Lincoln's sort of seating area that no one had bothered to fix. So if they had fixed the lock, if Parker hadn't gone to get a drink, I mean, all this if. So as we sort of move through all of this, and I will also say in defense of those people that listen to 911 calls, that's part of natural human survival. We have two gigantic drives in us. One is a sex drive and one is a survival drive. The reason people slow down, I wanted to see, because I always hate rubberneckers. Do you know why people slow down to look at accidents?
To feel relieved that they're not in it?
Part of it is it's the brain saying, you need to survive. So what happened to that car? See where the skid marks are. See how the car is tipped over and learn. See. Survive. So take it in to us passing by. It seems like what kind of information could you get from that? But it's a part of the brain that drives the instinct to survive. Says, see that, examine that, look at that. That's why we look at horrible things like that. That's why people look at fires. That's why people look at cars that are turned over. There's this fascination, but what the fascination is, it's the instinct to survive, to gain information so things like this don't happen to you. So it's not faulting anyone. It's not sort of a macabre curiosity. It's part of your brain telling you, know this, remember this, so you never are in this situation as well. So all right, other news, and we do have other news as well. We'll get to all of that as we're heading into a holiday weekend. Neil Morgan, 1-888-7-7-8-K-I-E-L. Thank you, everybody, at Keel Mortgage, for the great work that you do for everybody that calls Keel Mortgage. At that number, 1-888-7-7-8-K-I-E-L. And especially on a personal note, thank you, Keel Mortgage, for the great work that you're doing on the loan that I'm applying for. Let's see. I would like to take just a moment. If Andrew, can you find the Academy Award music, or Jacob, you can find that. I can't find it in my list of music, because I'd like to just take a moment and accept the award on behalf of all the listeners that wrote yesterday for the Mouse and Mousetrap and an update. Last night, I took video. And then friends calling saying, please don't put that video up. It makes you seem like you've lost your mind. And on behalf of the listeners, they told me to take a small piece of gauze and rub peanut butter all over it and then stick it in the trap. And then the little mouse will have to pull at the gauze to get the peanut butter. And then ultimately, in the end, I would be the one looking at a dead mouse in the morning. And that's exactly what happened. And on behalf of the listeners, I accept this award by holding up this trap right now in my right hand with the mouse still attached and the trap down on the end of the mouse's nose. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Wow.
This award brought to you by American Mousetraps.
Do you know what amazes me most about your mousetrap story? That you had gauze in your cabin.
I'd like to also let you know that it wasn't gauze. It was actually a dryer sheet, a bounce dryer sheet.
Uh-huh. I figured. I knew there was no gauze in that cabin. Too specific.
I did look for gauze, but couldn't find it. So I thought, well, what's the next best thing to gauze? How about this bounce dryer sheet? That's right, bounce dryer sheets. Not only to keep your dryer and your laundry smelling fresh and clean, it also makes a great way to rub peanut butter into a trap, stick it in the trap, and then have the trap come down swiftly right on the mouse's head.
So you have a static-free dead mouse that smells kind of nice.
Bounce fresh.
They should really get that in the marketing for the Bounce TV commercials.
Little did you know.
I don't know what the listener, who there was that sent that in, Jacob, but that worked perfectly. And then it's also, it's a weird thing. And I did take the video, did you put it up, Jacob? Did you try to save me from myself? I guess when I send you something like that, are you like,
There's always a hesitancy, and it's always like, am I going to get yelled at for posting it or yelled at for not posting it? And I never know which way it's going to go.
I mean, yelled at?
No, sorry. Yeah, really? You're right. No, it's not yelling. It's more of just like a disappointed conversation.
It's a little yelling.
Do you want to hear? I've got the sound from the video.
Yeah,
I don't,
that'd be great. Yeah.
All right. A listener said to get the mouse, put peanut butter on gauze, and then they'll pull at this to get the peanut butter, and bang, it'll get him. And I've also put Mr. Cowboy here to kind of lure him in, like, come on in. Come on in there, mouse man. Come on. What do you say, mouse man? You don't even know what a man.
A little cowboy.
And then also, Mr. Bunny's going to come over and say, hey, mouse. There's nothing wrong. Voice. Get that peanut butter. Yeah. Make sure you get the peanut butter. Don't be afraid of
toy.
I'm hanging by the peanut butter there.
I had the mouse. I had the bunny talking to the cowboy, and then I realized that I kind of lost focus on what I was trying to do. And then I also realized I didn't really have a real good voice for the bunny. It started to sound like the cowboy, so I made the cowboy sound more cowboyish.
And you couldn't give him an accent because you're not allowed to do that, so you kind of were stuck with a bunny cowboy voice. Otherwise, you could have done the French accent that you love.
Or I could have done instead of the Mexican gangster.
Can't do
gangbanger.
No, don't want to do that. Don't want to do that. Well, so
again, thanks to our listeners writing in. But he didn't warn me that it would be such a horrible mess in the morning that I had to clean up. It's also kind of a weird thing. You're like, oh, I'm a guy, I can handle this. But I was like, blah, 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 blah. And I actually did one of those sound.
I have a couple of questions, may I?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm happy that one mouse is gone, but I think it's been determined that there's probably a few more that need to be addressed. So what is the game plan going forward? Yes. What is the game plan? Will you, in fact, do more dryer sheets with peanut butter? Are you just so happy with your catch that you're going to let it go for a while? Because I don't think the problem is entirely resolved.
I'm going to take the mouse to the local taxidermy in mm-hmm. Ellensburg. And what do you think I am? Some sort of animal that I don't have an extra dryer sheet? That's right. The Bounce dryer sheet. I got the large family size. 25 dryer sheets come in one box of Bounce. I used 4 yesterday while at the Clay Ellum Laundry. And that's when I remembered I've got something close to gauze. I took the extra little piece that I didn't use in the laundry. I've used it in order to get the mouse.
Okay, understood. But how are you going to deal with the rest of the mice?
Bounce dryer sheets and another trap.
Okay, so you're gonna rinse and repeat. You're gonna do this again.
It worked. I'll do it again. I got plenty of peanut butter. Got plenty of dryer sheets, and I got a whole large. It's called family pack of mouse traps. Family pack.
Oh, you can't use a mouse trap more than once?
Well, you could if you didn't like get all and sweep it off the counter with a broom, okay. And then it hit the floor, and then I had a dog. I'm like, and now the whole thing is in a bag out on the front step. So I'm
okay.
Yeah. And I'll just all take it over to the old gigantic fire pile where normally I burn chicken carcasses and feel pretty good. Feel like a big, you know, the hunter.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're like a big, big game hunter now, big mouse hunter.
Bring it on!
You're going to have a bunch of little mouse heads just mounted in your cabin, as many as you can get.
Oh,
God. And then I know the listeners are like, well, there's one, you know, those things procreate, and then you get another one, another one. So I'm just waiting tonight to hear.
Could this potentially become a little bit of an obsession for you?
He's going to be eating my CQ13 stuff. An obsession?
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, yesterday you had me sitting in a chair with them crawling all over me, Sherry. I think that would be an obsession. This, I am proactively trying to restore
order
to
this
place.
The fact that the hunting of them, you know, that this will be like a nightly event. Like the night that you decide I've gotten them all, you're going to get up and say, what if there's one more? Get out the dryer sheet.
We used to live in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, in an old farmhouse. And my father, I remember being a little kid. My dad would set the traps at night, and we would all be sitting downstairs, and you hear one go, and snap, and my dad, got one, and then he would go up with a big burlap sack. I hear him. I guess that's a genetic thing. And then he'd throw them in the big burlap sack, and then flip the burlap sack over his back, and then out to wherever he went with them.
Oh, set them free.
Yes. So now I'm on a roll.
All right. Well, we need a head count.
I have to get Mr. Cowboy out again.
And Mr. Rabbit. Mr. Bunny.
Yeah. Bunny be like, hey, Holmes, what are you going to do tonight?
No.
That's the way the bunny talks. I'm not doing an accent. That's the bunny's voice.
Oh, okay.
Who gave the bunny that voice?
Oh, hi, Mickey.
Oh, hi.
You troublemaker, you.
Me? I didn't do anything.
You're asking questions about the bunny's voice.
I'm sorry that... Oh,
fair
oh,
question.
I think you've got some traffic to handle.
Never. I'm sorry. My bad.
By the way, let me... Yes. My buddy Dave, the cop, said, I don't listen to your stupid show. I don't listen to your dumb show. Your stupid, dumb show. I'm like, really? Because I was talking about it. I don't listen to your stupid show. So during the commercial break, he goes, how are you talking to me? I'm listening to your show. I said,
Well,
there's an 8-second delay in case Mickey curses. So that's why you can hear me.
I would never.
Never. You write to us at MyNorthWest.com. Come on in. Love to hear from you. You can also text us at the State Roofing text line, 1-888-973-5476. And everybody that texts us at the State Roofing text line, you know what they're going to get, Sherry?
A free dryer sheet.
Biggie bag.
That's right, a biggie bag.
Oh, okay.
Biggie bag.
I just thought Mickey really likes saying biggie bag a lot, so I grabbed that drop as well.
I don't know what that is, but okay.
Larry the Great Hunter writes to me, dryer sheets are generally known to be mouse repellents used in trailers, etc. I would say you got lucky, my friend. Use gauze or cotton balls going forward. Larry's the guy, my buddy, who like went out and hunted a cougar or bears and all that other stuff. So, and then I wrote him back, well, some of us know how to hunt and others don't. I invited him to a concert in Cleoma tomorrow. And now I'm just reading my text messages back and forth between Larry and myself. All right. Washington, D.C. decides it wants to do something, Sherry. And this is going to affect you. Do you drive around in a great big SUV?
I don't. We do have one of our cars is a pickup truck. But it's not one of these big, heavy trucks that they're talking about. So what they're saying is cars like the Ford F-250, Chevrolet Silverado, the Suburban, Cadillac Escalade. Actually, Cadillac Escalade is not one of the ones that falls into this. Jeep Wagoneer. All of these cars that are really, really heavy, if they're over 6,000 pounds, they're going to start, or they're trying to start, to raise the rates on this. The annual cost of the registration would go from $155 in D.C. to $500, and that would be the most expensive in the country. And they say they want to solve the problems caused by heavy trucks and SUVs, and that's higher numbers of traffic and pedestrian fatalities, increased pollution, and accelerated wear and tear on roads and bridges.
Uh-huh.
I can't see many F-250s riding around the streets of Washington, D.C., right? I don't know. Is it also about gas money? What's that? No, there aren't many, right?
Not that population, no.
No. And by the way, the pickup truck, not the 250, but the 150, I think that's one of the most popular cars/trucks sold in America. I think it's still number one. Yeah, so they're going to put this thing in place. What's been the fallout from this idea of charging people more for road wear?
It hasn't passed yet, so it's actually being discussed right now. It's pending. The mayor has to sign off on it before it can become a law. The current case, it's right now, it's about, let's see, it's 200. How much is it now? It's 155 to 500. So it would cost you about $2,500 over 5 years, they say. But there's kind of a carve out for EVs, because these electric cars, they weigh a lot more than a regular car because they've got these really heavy batteries. So they're saying that they're allowing for like 1,000 pounds of an electric car. They'll give you the first 1,000 pounds, because these are for cars that weigh over 6,000 pounds.
Well, you know, it's go after the guys that are driving the pickup trucks.
It's go after the people they think are wealthy enough to have these giant cars.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because these are expensive cars. I mean, the Suburban, all of these are really expensive cars. I think you're right. D.C. is not really a... I mean, if you have to park on the street, these are not practical cars to have in D.C. But if you have one and you have garage parking, or you have a garage in your home, chances are, you know, $500 extra bucks a month isn't going to stop you from buying a car that you want.
And Washington, D.C., especially some of those zip codes in D.C., there's some unbelievably rich neighborhoods, right? Because
yes,
these are the people sucking off of the rest of us, because that city produces zero. It is, and without us paying all of their salaries, it's either lawyers or lobbyists or someone else or legislators that are there in Washington, D.C. that are beneficiaries of our hard work. And boy, you see some of those neighborhoods, you think, what does that guy do for a living? Oh, I see. He lives off of us, because it's Washington, D.C.
Yeah, lots of wealthy neighborhoods. Lots of poor neighborhoods, too, but also some very, very expensive areas.
Yeah. The guys driving around the Ford 250s, I don't see them out there in the streets of D.C. But, you know, what'll happen is it'll pass there and then other places. Yeah, let's do it. Mm-hmm. Like, I can imagine in Seattle, they would have a road wear tax or something like that for bigger cars. Plus, we have by the way, one of the greatest joys of the last couple of weeks, I get all these, time to renew your stickers, right, for your car.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, bye-bye, King County. Kiss my boy. So I'm now an official resident out here. I got my driver's license, and now I can register all of my vehicles, all the busted down ones that are out here, all around. And I don't have to pay the ridiculous King County
Have charges. You totaled the savings yet? Do you know exactly what you're saving by not having to do all that?
Sure,
now?
I don't even know what I make at Cairo a week. So
okay,
I wonder,
sorry.
I mean, I think what I do is I convert it all to mouse traps and bouncer
and dryer
sheets. Yeah, I'm rolling in it right now.
Right.
All righty. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Are we going to say biggie bag in this particular spot?
Biggie bag.
Are
no, we're not.
Okay. All right.